This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
This wearing of the clothes, that makes them Kohanim. Almo, so we see from there, Kuhunoson Tuluyo Bevigdehem, their Kuhuno is dependent on their clothing. The Eloh, and if they're missing the clothing, Havaluhuzori Mehabazar. Vazar Ashkechan de Machilavoda. And we know already from Daf Tesvo that when a Zar, when a person is not a Kohen, performs the Avoda, that his machil avoid is possible. So the root
is chayav misa, like a zar would be.
Well, that's an interesting thing. That a zar is chayav misa. What about a mechusav godim? And where do we learn it from? We're going to come onto that. In fact, there's some gemara further on daf that goes into that. Where does the whole misa side come from? But at the moment, what we're seeing is that it's not. That he's puzzled the avoda because there's a requirement of clothing without which the avoda is possible. If there's a requirement of clothing to make him a kohen, so that what the impact of the clothing is on the gavra, not on the chefta. So if we talk about the gavra being the kohen, the gavra is the subject, the chefta is the object. The object is the, in this relationship, you've got a kohen, you've got a korban. The korban is the chefta, the korban is the object. The man, the kohen, is the gavra. So we might have thought that the clothing impacts the chefter. And in order for the chefter to be kosher, you have to be wearing certain clothing. But that's not what we're learning. The clothing impacts the gavra. Once the gavra is impacted, it impacts the chefter. So the real movement of energy, as we were discussing last time, is from the clothing inward, not so much from the clothing outward. The clothing impacts the kohen, the clothing makes him a kohen. Without the clothing, he's not a full kohen.
But that's where the clothes make the kohen.
Clothing makes the kohen. That's where it comes from.
I think it's interesting that Bach leaves out the lamed, avisha as those kihuna.
Right.
Itself is kihuna.
That the avisha itself is the kihuna. Yeah, it's interesting to try and work out what the difference would be with or without the Bach. This levisha makes them a kohen, and if we take out the kohen, the levisha is the kohen. That is actually the kohen. And this is so powerful that, as we saw, this is in the Rambam. It's brought both in the Sefer HaMitzvot and in the Yad. And he brings that Vobe Perush, Bizman Shibigdeim Aleim Kuhanosom Aleim, or Bizman Shein Bigdeim Aleim, Ein Kuhanosom Aleim, or Hovu Lohem Zarim. If they don't have their clothing, they are Zarim. They're not Kohanim. And it's interesting, it doesn't say Kizarim. Neither Rashi nor the Rambam says they are like Zarim. They are Zarim. Not that they have the din of Zarim, they are not Kohanim. Without the clothing, they are not Kohanim. What is a Kohen? Kohen is a certain individual with a certain DNA from the son of a certain father who's wearing certain clothing. That's a Kohen. And if any of those factors are absent, he's not a Kohen.
Which makes it sound like you get it for Yichad Misa. But I mean, it's not as if without the Kohen and clothing you can now marry a convert.
It's a good question. Does that mean if he's not a Kohen, can he marry a divorcee?
So I would understand this whole line. Why aren't they just saying he can't do the service to the Kohen? Why say he is a Kohen when so many things come into question?
It would have to say that there is such a thing as a Kohen outside of the Beis HaMikdash and there's a Kohen inside of the Beis HaMikdash. They're two different beings, two different qualities. Kohen outside the Beis HaMikdash has certain halachas that apply to him, and what makes him a Kohen, an outside Beis HaMikdash Kohen, is his birth, is what makes him a Kohen. But there's another din altogether. To be a Kohen, what does the word Kohen mean? Where does it come from? What does Lechahen mean? It's to worship in the Beis HaMikdash, isn't it? Mm. Lechahen. What was Yisrael?
Kohen Magad.
He was a Kohen. So Kohen is not only for the Beis, even the Goyim have Kohen. Even in Avodah Zorah there's Kohen. Kohen is a person who is dedicated to temple worship of whatever religion. In Torah, being a Kohen means that you are an outside Kohen wearing the appropriate clothing inside the Beis Hamikdash. There are a lot of other conditions too, but meanwhile that's the one that we're learning, that to be a Kohen, one who is authorized to serve in the temple, you need to be a Kohen by birth who's wearing the clothing of the Kohen. And if you're not, but again, it's not that you need to be a Kohen, is one who's born a Kohen. Now there's a din, in order to serve in the temple you've got to wear clothing. No. A Kohen is a person born as a Kohen who is wearing the clothing of a Kohen. Those are the two conditions.
Who is a Zar?
And a Zar is anybody else. Everybody else is a Zar. So again, there's a Zar outside the Beis HaMikdash. A Zar outside the Beis HaMikdash, anybody's not born a Kohen. But a Zar in the Beis HaMikdash is even somebody who is born a Kohen if he's not dressed properly. He has the din of a Zar.
A Kohen who marries a convert or a divorcee, is he considered a Zar?
No.
He's not even Kezar. He's
a full
Kohen. So they don't use that term.
No, he's a full Kohen. His children are called Chalalim. His child is a Chalal. And cannot serve as a Kohen. But he himself is a Kohen. So now let's go a little bit further to see another possibility. Ask the Gemara, is that where you learn this law from? I thought you learned this from a different pasuk altogether. So the Gemara is now going to bring an alternative source for this din that a Kohen without clothing, without the proper clothing, is Mechalel the Aveda. Tanya, we learned in a brisa. Minayin lishutuye yayin. Where do we know from that somebody who is drunk? And shutuye yayin doesn't necessarily mean drunk. Even a small amount of wine puzzles the person. So even a glass of wine, basically, it's very similar to the requirements of the DMV for driving under the influence of alcohol. Very very small amounts do it.
They have a breathalyzer at the
kind of yeah. Where do we know from that shutuye yayin cannot drink wine, cannot on the chalal avodah? Shim ovad chilal, that if a kohen, born a kohen wearing the clothes of kohen, but he had a glass of wine, that if he serves, he's mechalal avodah. Where do we know that from? Talmud Lomer, we learn it from an interesting pasuk in Vayikra. Yayin v'sheichar al teisht, they should not drink wine or beer. And the Torah goes on, u'lahavdil ben ha-kodesh u'ben ha-chol. Let's have a look at the pasuk inside. This was after Elazar and Itamar die in the Imbert service. And one view is it's because they had something to drink before. And then they're given the din. Elazar, I'm sorry, not Elazar. So after the event with Elazar and with Nadav and Abihu, that Hashem says, "Va'yadaber Hashem al Aaron le'emar." Hashem gives Aaron the halacha: Yain v'sheichar al teisht. Do not drink wine or beer. Ato uvonecho, you talk, you and your children, meaning all the Kohanim, bevoachem el oamoed, when you come into oamoed, beloisom mususa, that you do not die. Chukas oilom adoresichem, this is a chukah for everyone, for all generations. Ula habdil bein ha-kodesh uvein ha-chol uvein ha-tomo uvein ha-tor, and to separate between that which is kodesh and that which is chol, and that which is tomo and that which is tor. Says Rashi, what does that mean? Kadesh tavdilu ben aveda kadosha lemechuleres. so that you will differentiate between avodah which is kodesh and avodah which is mechula, avodah which is holy and avodah which has been spoiled. Holamah. That's what you learn from here. Shimor bad avodah sopsula. But if he serves, his service is possible. So again, Elazar and Nadav and Avihu come in having drunk something and they suffer this terrible death. And Hashem comes and says, don't drink wine and beer before you go into avodah, so that you separate between avodah that is kodesh and avodah which is chol. Meaning, if you don't drink, then the avodah you do is kodesh. If you do drink, the avodah you do is chol. So we learn from there that a kohen who has drunk something, a glass of wine, and serves an avodah, the avodah is chol. Says Rashi, uvein hachol. Look at that last, that Rashi on the bottom line. Avoido she'ato oved b'shikrus kuruyocho. Avoido that you serve in the state of shikrus, under the influence of alcohol, is considered cho. So what do you see is the difference now between learning this from learning the case of Mechusa Begodim as we did. Let's go a little bit further.
What's the difference between zar and cho?
Sorry?
The difference between Zara
and what is the difference between Zara and Chol?
It's Misa, not Misa, maybe.
What is the difference between Zara and Chol? You're right about that. So that's drunkenness. Mechusa begodim v'shaloi rochutz yodayim raglayim inayim. Where do you know from a case of mechusa begodim and shaloi rochutz yodayim raglayim? So we have three cases here. We have Shtriya Yayin, a Kohen is drunk. We have Mechusa Begodim, a Kohen isn't properly clothed. And we have Shaloi Rochus Yodayim Rognayim, who hasn't washed his hands and feet. So we'll see what the connection is between all three. But what we have a source in this price, we have a source for Shikrus, for drinking. Kohen serves while he's drunk. We have a posset that says, Hashem says, if you drink, that's not a good avodah. Where do we know from that the same applies to Mechusa Begodim and Shemon Rochus Yodayim Raglayim Inayim, Talmud Lomar, the beginning of the next page, we learn from that, Chuka Chuko L'Gzeira Shava. We learn a Gzeira Shava. What is a Gzeira Shava? Where a word is very clearly used, an unusual word is used in different places in the Torah, we cross-apply the halachas. Even if the cases don't appear to be linked, we cross-apply the halacha. So what is the word chukko here comes with all of them. We saw in the case of Shtriya Yayin it said chukko. We saw in the case of Mechusa Begodim it says chukas oilam. It should be a chukas oilam. The same is Shiloh Yerochus Yodai Veroglayim, the word chok applies, it said. So in all three cases the word chok appears, and so we learn in Gzeira Shova, just as in Shtriya Yayin, Moshe warns Aaron and says, if your children drink before they serve the avodah will be possible. So in the case of Mechusa Begodim, if they're not clothed properly, or they're not haven't washed their hands and feet, their avodah will be possible. So we now have two possible sources for the din of Mechusa Begodim. Shesuye Yayin comes from the pasuk we just learned after Nadav and Avihu. What about Mechusa Begodim not being clothed properly? One possibility is to learn it from where we learned it last Wednesday, and that is the Chogato is an Adnait, Aaron of Honor, the Chavash of the Mikbos, Boisel, the Hemakuna, the Chukasailo. You shall clothe them and that will make them Kohani, implying if they're not clothed, they are Zarim. And the other possibility is to learn it as a Gezerah Shova from Shetuya Yayin. Just as Shetuya Yayin, which is called a Chok, if they drink and they serve their Avodah, their Avodah is fossil. So if they're not properly clothed, which is also called a Chok, and they perform the Avodah, their Avodah is not kosher. What is the difference between in these two ways of learning? Do you want to say, Moshe?
Oh, one difference between the Zar and the Chok is that the Zar and the Chalal is that it's also a Gavran Hefta.
Right, that's exactly what
that
the difference.
That he sees a Zar and his work is Chal.
Right, so if we learn it from the first Pasuk, then we would be saying the reason that the Avodah is Chol is because he's a Zar. So where is the flaw? The causal flaw is in the subject, not in the object. Because he's a Zara, the korban is no korban. Whereas if we learn it from Shetuya Yayin, what does it say about Shetuya Yayin? Look what Rashi says. Avodah she'ato oved b'shikrus this avoda which you're serving in shikras, kuru yochol the avoda is called, you're a kohen. A drunk kohen is still a kohen. But there's another law. The korban is not a korban, even though you're a kohen. Those are two different principles. Either the korban is not a korban because the kohen is not a kohen, or the korban is not a korban because the kohen was drunk. He's a good kohen, he's just a drunk kohen. And that isn't going to work. Those are the two different ways of wording it.
I'm still not sure we start off with Mechusar Begadim, which applied to the cloak. Well, what is the source of the problem that we're trying to get at here?
So we're trying to say there are two possible places from which we can learn that Mechusar Begadim causes a Pesul in the Avodah. The one is the pasuk that talks about begodim, and the other is the zera shel al chukah.
But the drunk kohen has nothing to do with it. He could be wearing it, as you pointed out.
Yes, drunk kohen is just one law still in the Torah, and the word chok is used by that law. And since the word chok is also used by begodim, we apply the same rules. And we say, just as in the case of the drunken kohen, the korban is pasul. So in the case of Mechusar Begadim, the korban is possible.
But for two completely different reasons.
But then the reasons would be different. So we've got to figure out which is the right one. So the law is the same. We know. The law is the same. So it's really interesting that the Gemara is interested in where we learn it from, not just what is the law. The law is the korban is chol. We know that. The Mishnah says that, and we know that. That's not up for debate. A kohen who doesn't have the right clothing on performs a korban. The korban is chol. We know that. The question is, why? Where does it come from? Two different sources. What difference does it make which one they come from? Well, there's a conceptual, very big conceptual difference. The one, the source of the cause of the psul is in the gavra, and the other, the gavra is fine. The cause of the psul is just that a certain halacha hasn't been fulfilled. That is, the sobriety of the kohen is a requirement.
Focus on the center of the center.
But are you focusing here on the individual, on the person, or on the action? Yeah. And so let's, leaving aside Shasuya Yain for a moment, well, let's explore it, because if it says Xereshova, what does Xereshova mean? A word applies here, a word applies there, you link them all together. Very simple. But I would suggest that whenever the Torah chooses to teach us something by Xereshova, it's because the Torah wants us to make a conceptual connection as well, not just a linguistic connection. It says chok, so put the two together. That would be a very odd thing to say. That would be like saying, we're eating dinner at a table, and then I could say, can you make a table of the of certain measurements? Table here, table there. So there's a din, you've got a bench after you've had dinner, so you've got a bench after you've made a table on an Excel spreadsheet. That's what Xereshova would be. So it's insanity. So to think that that's what Xereshova is. So clearly, when the Torah gives us a Xereshova, it's to teach us that there are certain common principles. As different as the situations seem to be, there's certain common principles. So let's play with that idea again a little bit and say, okay, so Shtuya Yayin. Why would a Kohen who's had something to drink, why would his Avodah be chol? If he's a good Kohen, where's the problem?
Because he can't have the right Kavana when he's
so
drunk.
It would be Kavana. It would seem to be Kavana. It would seem to be intent.
Certain disrespect shown by coming into the Beit HaMikdash after having had a few belts.
Is it too highfalutin to suggest that wine is a spiritual thing, called spirits in the right vernacular, and perhaps it's a spirituality which conflicts with the spiritual activity being done by the Kohen? Is there some competing spirituality here?
What is the nature of what wine does that could cause a problem with the korban? Why for kiddush do we use yayin, and for chuppah and kiddushin we use yayin, and for benching we use yayin, and for avdala we use yayin? It's a big deal. So use yayin for, we pour yayin. There's nesachim. We pour wine onto the korban. What's the big deal if he uses wine the shem shemayim? He makes kiddush before he does the korban. What's the big deal?
Well, I mean, every Yom Kippur we say alchesh chadadik.
But then why do it before Kiddush?
Well, because you made the bracha, you have to drink something. Otherwise, you have a
bracha. Why use the wine? Why use wine for Kiddush? Use bread. That should be the preferred way. No chance of getting drunk. So you see, there are times when we have to do it. There are times. What is it about the Kohen, based on some of what we learned last week, perhaps? What is there about a Kohen that would make the wine a problem in his avodah? What do we say the wine, the main thing of the wine is? The main thing of the Kohen. What is his function?
He's a transmitter of energy.
He's not an originator of energy. He's a transmitter of energy. What does Yain do? Can be Yisamach Levavinosh. So what would that do as far as transmission of energy? It's what is Simcha? Is Simcha transmission of energy or origination of energy? Simcha is generating. And Chasana, you want Simcha, Shabbos, Kanzin, you want to generate something that wasn't there before.
So it's coming too full of himself when he's got up.
Well, he's not a transmitter. There's too much. There's presence. There's a degree of ego that comes with it, and that's not the Kohen's role. So if we continue playing, remember we said we're going to play with these ideas and see where they lead us. If we play with the idea that the Kohen is a transmitter, then Yain gets in the way. Just as the wrong clothing can get in the way. And we said that the clothing have two. We're going to see with the clothing, there's the external from the Kohen outward, but there's also from the Kohen inward. So we would say then, you're a good Kohen, that's fine, there's nothing wrong with you as a Kohen, it's just your energy doesn't get out to the Korban. There's a blockage between the transmission, it's the floor of the Beis HaMikdash, is where the energy is coming from, and it comes through you, and your mind isn't directed. What do you use to transfer the energy from the floor to the Korban? What are you using? You're using your bodies, but you're certainly also using Kavona. There's got to be focus. The word for kavona is what the most accurate translation of the word kavona is focus. It's not attention. It comes from kibun, it comes from direction. The most accurate translation of the word kavona is focus. So really what the Kohen has to do is collect all this energy from the Beis HaMikdash and focus it on the korban. What is wine impair more than anything else? Why don't they like you driving when you're drink? Focus! You're not focused and your eyes blur. And you're not focused mentally, and you're not even focused physiologically. That's why it's a Sameach Levav Enosh. Because if you're very focused, that's not a time for Simcha. When you're very focused, you're focused. When you're focused, your mind is working. When your mind is working, it's not a great time for Simcha. Because what are you thinking of when your mind is working? But mainly, you think of all sorts of things, including yourself. And fear and all of that. That's not it. That's not great. And what can go wrong? You think of all the negatives. You think of all the risks. You think you're weighing up. You're not in a state of simcha. Simcha is when you let go of the thinking. Then there can be simcha. If you're in the right state and you can let go of the simcha of thinking, so that there's not kalus rosh, but there's true simcha, then there's simcha. But if the kohen lets go of the kibun, there's no way that he can take the energy and consolidate it and focus on a korban. So that would be the problem. A great Kohen, nothing wrong with you Kohen, but the energy wasn't transmitted to the Korban is Chol. How would it work with Begolim then? What would we say with Begolim if that were the case?
Well, he's not even a Kohen if he's not wearing the Begolim.
Well, that's the first Pasuk. But if we learn it from the second Pasuk, then it's the same Ishtu Yayin. If it's the same Ishtu Yayin, then he is a good Kohen. So why?
The Beis HaMikdash, he's not a good conduit because
he's not a good conduit. So in that case, would the clothes be for transmission or would be outward or inward?
Outward, because he can't.
The second pasuk assumes the role of the clothes is outward, and if he doesn't have the right clothes, just as Shetu Yayin doesn't allow for proper transmission, so not being properly clothed doesn't allow for proper transmission. And last week we spoke about that. The clothing has that effect with energies both ways. Clothing, it energizes you, and clothing puts out an energy to the people in the room around you, who see you. So clothing has this capacity to transmit both ways. That's the difference, the conceptual difference. It's not a halakhic difference, but the conceptual difference between learning it from the first posuk and the second posuk is, what is the psul of the clothing? Does a kohen need clothing because of what the clothing does to the kohen? Or does the korban need a clothed kohen because without the clothing, the energy of the Kohen isn't transmitted outward. It stays inside. The wrong clothing. You've got to have clothing which is not insulation. You've got to have clothing which is a conductor of energy. And the Torah, Rebbeinu Shem, designed the Kohen's clothing to be able to conduct the Kohen's energy outward and not block it and not insulate it. And if you don't have the right clothing, if you have too little clothing or too much clothing, it doesn't act as a transmitter of energy. So I would suggest that the difference between these two limudim is in the very essence of the Big Day Kahuna and their role in the Korban. Is their role an external transmission, in which case it's like Shitui Yayim, you're a good Kohen, just the energy doesn't get to the Korban, so the Korban is Chol. Or is the role inward, you're not a Kohen if you're not properly clothed. That's what the Gemara is exploring and deciding, what is the origin of this halacha? Where does it really come from? What about a person Shaloi Rochutz Yodayim Roglayim? Where's that learned from? So now you have a Kohen, his hands and feet are unwashed.
Which are the clothes?
Like which one of the clothes?
No, like the clothes being not a conduit, because he can't use a body
feet. So if his feet haven't been washed, there isn't proper connectivity to the floor. And if his hands haven't been washed, there isn't proper connectivity to the korban. So we see that second rite is all about connectivity. And the clothing being the interface between the Kohen and the outside is an element in the interface. And what's interesting then is that the kavana also, his mental intent, also becomes one of the tools of transmission of energy. And that gives us a sense altogether of what the power of kavana is. The power of kavana then is not just, again, to understand something. So sometimes you have that kavana in order to grasp something, in order to understand something. Now we're saying that you need kavana, you need focus in order to transmit your mental energy outward. And what do sportsmen use to achieve excellence and to break records? What is their most important tool?
Focus.
Is that an inward or an outward thing? Are they taking their own energy and focusing it outward, or are they taking outward energy and focusing it inward?
No, it's
their energy outward. That's what it is. That's focus. When they teach you to play golf, what is that all about? It's your own. What's one of the most important? I don't know, a lot of things from what I understand in golf, but what's amazing is how important the eye is in golf. Keeping that eye focused on the ball, and leave your body then to do the rest. That's all you have to do. Because what are you doing? You're transmitting your energy to that point, and the body follows. It's an outward movement. So kavana is not just about an inward thing. Kavana is also about taking what energy you've got, and the energy that we've got. If you look at the Kohen as a model, it's just so interesting, because now again, where does the Kohen's energy come from?
Sure.
From the floor, from the universe, from the world. So we can take energy from the world, we can compact it, we can focus it, and we can transmit it outward. And with that we can change the world. There's nothing that you can't do without taking the energy. If you just use your own energy, it's very limited. But if you can take energy from the world, take energy from the Rebbeinu Shlom, you can take energy from Torah, you can take energy from the world, from other people, and you can build that energy up within yourself, and you can focus it, with that you can change the world. So you've got all these, again, as we said last week, today, the world is much more open to this kind of stuff, because the Western world has more access to what the Eastern world has been doing, the Asian world has been doing in terms of research in these areas. But today it's well known that you can actualize a vision with focus, that you can actually dream something up and make it happen. Doesn't work 100% of the time, but it works a surprisingly large number of times. That just by the power of focus, you can, and clear visioning of what it is that you want, and remaining focused on that, you can actually make it happen. And we get some kind of a sense of all of this here. The power that there is in the human being, in this case it's a Kohen, because we're talking about this Hamikdash thing, but the principles apply in life altogether, the power of the human being to be in touch with the world, to get the energy from the world, take it inside himself, and using his mind and his clothes and his hands to be able to transmit that energy outward. And we use all of those three things. Look at any kind of human interaction. And just imagine if you really want to optimize it. So if you're going into a really important meeting, a really important interview, what are you using? Focus, clothing, how your whole bearing and your expression and your body language, your movement. Those are the tools you have. There isn't anything else. That's all we have to impact the world. Our minds, our appearance, and our physical movements. That's all we've got. That's what we control the world with. That we work the world with. That. That's all that we've got. And those are the three factors of this brisa. The extent to which the Kohen's avodah is kodesh depends on the purity of his points of contact with the world, his point of contact with the outside, the focus of his mind, and the clothing with which he goes about his work. Those are the factors. So Rashi just says in the top Rashi of the next page, Chukko, Bishtuye Yayin Ksiv Chukas Oilom. In the case of Shituye Yayin, it says Chukas Oilom. Uva Mechusa Begodim, in the case of the Kohen without clothes, Ksiv Kuhuna Lechukas Oilom. Again, the word Chok. Uva Chitzas Yad Beregel, Ksiv Ohoysol Lehim Lechukas Oilom. In the case of Yad Beregel, also it says, and it shall be for them a chok or olam, it will be for them an eternal chok. In all cases, the word chok is used. And again, last week, what did we say a chok was? Engraved in the universe, in the world. The chok. This is the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world with this as a law of physics. Basically, these are a chok. That's the way it's built. That we can't see and measure the impact of washing his hands and feet, because we're not talking about a physical impediment. We're not talking about physical insulation, but just as there is physical insulation, so there is spiritual insulation, and the power of water from the kiyor to remove that insulation. The same applies with the begodim. The same applies with the shusuya yayin. We're talking about non-measurable interruptions between the kohen and his world, and this is chok. That's the way the world is designed. So now the question is, which one is the right one? And of course, it's going to impact us on our understanding of the role of clothing. Because if we're going to learn principles of clothing from Big Day Kahuna, well, now it depends. If we're going to learn it from the first pasuk, then what we're learning from Big Day Kahuna is how clothes radiate human energy outward. And if we're going to learn it from Shetuya Yain, we're going to learn how clothes are used to focus energy inward onto the person. It's a different role and a different function. So let's continue the Gemara. So the Gemara, Ime Hosom, and we actually can't learn it from the second verse. Why not? Hava Amina, because I would then have thought, Hani Mili Avoido Dzar Chayiv Aleho Miso. Aval Avoido De'en Dzar Chayiv Aleho Miso Eim Aloi. Kamashmala. So what is the Gemara telling us? If we would learn it from the Brisa, from the second case here, from Shetuya Yayin, I would have thought that this only applies in those areas of Avodah for which a Zar is Chayav Misa. But those Avodahs for which he's not Chayav Misa, I would have thought that they don't apply. There are different areas of Avodah. Let's have a look at Rashi. If we learned it all from Shetuya Yayin, Hava Amina, I would have thought, Hani Mili de Machli Avoida b'Mechusa Begodim. When does a lack of clothing spoil the Avoida? The Avoida Shehazar Chayev Oleha Miso. Only with that Avoida which a Zar, if a non-Kohen does it, he would be guilty of death. Ki dichtiv b'ha'okro b'va'achem el Oel Moed v'loi tamusu. That's what, in the case of Shetuya Yayin, that's exactly what it says. That if you come into the Beis HaMikdash and you've drunk something, you shouldn't do the Avodah, so that you do not die. So it would appear that we're talking in the area of Avodah Bazar, which is capital. So there are certain cases of Avodah Bazar which can result in death. There are certain cases of Avodah Bazar which will not result in death. And which are they? Arba avodos. there are four avodas that if a zar performs them, there's death. What are those avodas? Zerikun, and I thought last week you get into a different world here. I'm talking about activities and actions that are only in the world of the Beis HaMikdash. Which are they? Zeriko, the sprinting of the dam, of the blood. Haktoro, the bringing of the certain parts of the korban onto the altar itself, onto the mizbeach. Venisuch hamayim v'hayayim, and the pouring of water or wine on the korban. Kili yafinim ferik beis b'seder yuma, as we learn in Gemara Yuna, yuma me'avadet tem. Avodos matono, avodos som. The Gemara word learns from avodos som, avoda that entails matono. Part of the avoda there is an outward action of giving away. So zriko, you're throwing. Haktoro, you're bringing that part of the animal onto the mizbeach. Nisuch hamayim, you're pouring water or you're pouring wine onto the mizbeach. So the avoda, the different actions, the different activities of avoda fall into different categories. One of them is avodas matona. That part of the avoda which entails giving away. If a zar performs that avoda, that's chayav misa. V'hazar hakorev yumas avodas matona v'lo avodas siluch. That applies to avoda of giving and not avoda of taking away. Some of the avodas are avoda of removal from the Beit Korban. Ve'avadaton, another limud is avoda tamo v'lo avoda sheyesh achareha avoda. Avoda tom, again from the Gemara, plays with the word tom. Avoda tam, meaning an avoda that is tam, that completes the avoda, and not an avoda that has a further avoda afterwards. Kegon kabola v'hoilocho ukumitzo. In the case of kabola, receiving the blood in the utensil, transporting the blood from the place where the animal was slaughtered to the korban, ukumitza, and pinching the flour that needs to be put on a flour offering, all of those are first actions which entail a second action thereafter. They're not actions that stand alone. So however we do this, the Gemara divides the activities of the avoda into those that are tom, and there are two different meanings to that. The one is matono, they're avodas which are giving away rather than taking, or avoidas which have no further avoda after them. Those are the avoidas for which there is death for a zar. The whole chiyuv miso is bipsule avoda mizarus gamrinan kiditnan referik basra, and all the cases of a zar of misa are learnt from zar. So you asked earlier that whether we learn just as the zar is chiyuv miso, so is the mechusa begolim. Says Rashi, all the cases of miso, the capital nature of any aspect of avoda are learned from zar. Just as the zar is chayav misa, so the others are chayav misa. When is the zar chayav misa? Only with those four avodas. So now, if we would learn mechusar begodim from shetuye yayin, what would we learn then? When is a mechusar begodim chayav misa? Or rather, when is a mechusar begodim mechalal avoda? Go through it again. Shtuye yayin, we're told in the Torah, the consequence of that is death. We know that death comes to a zar if he performs four avodas, not the other three. If he performs the four avodas to me, so what did we say there?
All four of them, any one of them.
Any one of them. So Kabbalah, we said, Aktoro, Kemitzo, Nesech, Yayin, all of those cases there would be miso. So if we learn, if we say shisuya yayin for serving in the temple in a state of drunkenness, there's miso. From that we learn mechusa begodim as well. That would mean when is mechusa begodim mechala la'avoda? In a case where a zar would be chayav misa. That means the mechusa begodim is mechala la'avoda only in those four. But that isn't the case. Mechusa begodim is mechala la'avoda in all of them. And that's why we need to learn it from the first person. So we'll summarize that again next week. But and I'm not going to spend too much time on the technical side of it. I want to spend some time on it so that you get into the methodology of coaching. But the important thing ideologically, conceptually, that we're learning here is that there are two possible places from which to learn that Mechusa Begodim is Mechalel Avodah. One is from a pasuk of Mechusa Begodim itself, and one is indirectly through Shetuyah Yayin. If we learn it from the Mechusa Begodim pasuk itself, we're learning that the psul is in the Gavra, not in the Chetzer. If we're learning it from the second pasuk from the Brayta, we're learning it that the psul is in the Chetzer, not in the Gavra. If we're learning from the first, we're assuming that the role of clothing is to transmit the energy outward. If we're learning it from the second, we're assuming the role of the clothing is to transmit the energy inward. And the Gemara is now going into a discussion as why do we need both psukim? Why would we have two places from which we can learn the same halacha? And the Gemara is differentiating that there is a limiting factor in learning the second, in learning it from the second place, and therefore we've got to learn it from the first. It's interesting that this din, as we're going to see much further on, of Shetuyah Yayin, we learn from the same posuk that a rov can't paskan a halacha if he's had something to drink. And then we'll see that there were Tanoim and Amoraim who wouldn't paskan a halacha after Kiddush on Friday night until the next morning. Because even just having had Kiddush from the Kiddush cup was already enough to defocus them sufficiently that they couldn't pass an halacha. Which
you assume they must the cuffs, is that it, or just a sip? Or is there something?
At least a mouthful. Okay, at least a mouthful.
And that would do it.
That could do it. That's the level of focus needed to pass an halacha. So you see from that website, if psak just means looking after the Mishnah Berurah, then it doesn't matter if you have a glass of wine. But you see from there what psak is, what creative forces there need to be in psak, and what accuracy and what understanding and what depth and what, well, the main thing is clarity. What absolute clarity there needs to be. And the same in the case of the coin. Although the coin is not paskening anything, he's not having to use his mind for decision making. It's interesting that the same person, a rogue who has to paskin a halacha, has to use his mind to make a decision, so we understand why his mind has to be clear. The coin doesn't use his mind in this. Well, that's what we might have thought, but we're now realizing that the level of kavana, the focus you need for kavana, is as much as the focus you need for understanding, for learning, and for pasuk, for psak. That's the degree of focus that you need. So then we have to start asking ourselves with davening, because don't forget, davening is our avodah today. What we do for davening is the equivalent of. So what happens if we just take this?
When you say the word, you say we're not doing anything at all.
I'm for sure we're not doing anything at all. Just say,
well, why am I going to venue?
You're getting, it's better than not getting to the venue. You're done. The action is there. There's a kind of an action, but is it really going to change your day? Is it really going to have impact? No, why would it have impact? What is there to make it have impact? But if we take any of these halakhas and we take them through, so what? If we're serious about understanding this, when it comes to davening, now we are the kohanim. We don't have kohanim doing our avodah, so we're doing the avodah ourselves. You see what can happen with a bit of focus.
Use your head.
So it comes. How would you transfer this to davening? If I would say apply these principles to davening, what would you do?
Dress well.
So you would dress appropriately.
Don't drink before davening.
Don't drink. Don't.
We don't have the perfect kohanim after we drink. That's what we're doing on Shachrit and Musaf. But we're all plastered at Musaf.
Go barefoot.
Yeah, there's no question at all that what we're doing on Simchas Torah is a Chilul Hashem and Yisurim Doraisa. There's absolutely no question about it. There's no origin. There's no basis for drinking on Simchas Torah. Mm-hmm. It's just. And certainly the way where it's got to
Purim
is a little different. But even there are lots that govern as to how much and when and so on. But in the middle of a davening, before a davening, so much so that you could abuse the biggest kohen because you're worried about the kohen's kavanah on the duchen. What about your kavanah when you're davening?
Uh-huh.
When you're saying the Rebbeinu's name, what about that? It just doesn't make any sense that should be going on. But we get an idea of what kind of clarity there needs to be, that a kohen's clarity in bringing a korban has to be the same as a rov's paskening a shaila. So that's when we're sitting down to daven, that's the kind of focus that we need. There needs to be absolute focus and intent on the davening. And that's where we fall down, and I touched a little bit on that in the Awakening series. That's where we fall down, not that the Asians, Chas v'Shalom, and the yogis and all these guys know anything that we don't know. They don't have any secrets that we don't have. But they've been focusing on methodology. We've been focusing on Shmiras Amitzvos, on doing the, on just going through the actions, and keeping the actions accurate. And we've preserved that. That we do that quite well. But the making it work for us, we haven't really done that. I really can't think of a case where a young man in yeshiva has been taught how to have kavanah. He's been taught that you have to have kavanah. But how do you do it? I don't know of a lot of shiurim on that. I can't think of ever having heard of a shiur on how to, not how to daven and what do the words mean and are the laws of davening. And the, when your mind is elsewhere, how do you bring it back?
It doesn't sound like a shiur receptive topic. That would seem to be an individual teacher and student, something like that. Because everyone's, it seems like one teacher and one student working with him, we know that that's where you could learn that.
Yeah, but when you go to a yoga class, what do they teach you?
I don't know.
So that's good. You should go. It helps with davening. Uh-huh. What do they teach? Where your mind should be, your breathing, your focus, what part of your body you should be focused on. Try holding your focus, hold your balance. Try it a little longer. Tomorrow we'll try a little longer. The methodology, how to do it. We're not putting enough effort into that. How do you actually do it? How do you develop kavanah when your mind isn't there? And you rush in the morning, and you have the minyan, and again, we get there in time, we're going to be there in time for Baruch Hu, and be there in time for Baruch Shama. Our focus is on being, that's good, that's fine, we need all of that. But now that I'm there, now that I'm in davening, how do I make this work for me? How do I make this actually achieve something? How do I change the world? How do I harness this energy and bring it onto my day and bring it into my life in a way that makes sense? That's something that we have to look at. That's what we'll talk a bit about it next week. In fact, tefillin. What is tefillin about? Conceptually, what is tefillin? I know halachically what tefillin is, but what do you think tefillin is conceptually? What does it look like to you? Person puts on tefillin, what does it look like? Can you send me that article, remember? On tefillin. I think it was you who sent it to me with the acupuncture points. What does tefillin look like? If you just walked in and you saw somebody putting on tefillin, what would you think?
Really weird.
Let's say you knew it wasn't weird. So this is some guy from the Himalayas and he's been studying this thing and he comes and he's...
Antenna.
It's clearly antenna. So now what is it? Are you transmitting or receiving?
Receiving.
Well, begodim. Maybe tefillin are far like begodim. They can work both ways. Maybe you can receive and maybe you can transmit. How do you do that? Is it enough just to put them on and your mind somewhere else? Now, why don't we wear tefillin all day? What's the reason we don't wear tefillin all day?
Because
you can't focus all day. The halacha is we're supposed to wear tefillin all day. The reason we don't is because we can't focus all day. So what do you see from there? Tefillin need focus. Where do we even learn how to do that? How do we know? What are we supposed to be focusing on when we put tefillin on? What are we supposed to be thinking? How do you use tefillin? How do you use tefillin? I know how to put them on. But how do I use them? Ever heard anybody give shiurim on that? Does anybody really know? So we've developed a lot of skills in the technical thing, which has been important for us, because Chas v'Shalom, if we lose that, we've got nothing. We know how to do it. We know how to go through the actions. But how do we make it work for us? That's the area that there needs to be a lot more attention to. And we get some sense from Kochim as to the importance of this and how much is put into that and the power of the mind, because when we're dealing with Kochim, it's very multidimensional. Focus and intention is one, timing is one, place is another one. All the different dimensions of life come to play in the avodah of the Beis HaMikdash. And we'll take it a little further next week in that session. Who did we have? Who was here last week? Isn't here this week? Joshua?
Nathan.
Is Alan Saf?
No, Alan, both times Alan Conn, Sunday and Wednesday.
Next Sunday we're on.
Yes.
Okay.
Moshe wanted to know if is there a difference to people between Wednesday night and Thursday night? If there is, we'll keep it Wednesday night. If there isn't, we might look at changing.
Wednesday is generally better than Thursday for me.
Wednesday is generally better for you.
I have a Thursday, sure.
I guess we'll leave on Wednesday.
Sorry.
Do you have a Sunday last Sunday?
No. Thanks, I got your email. No, I mentioned that we didn't. And I sent around an email that we didn't know when last Sunday.
Did you hear
yes.
On what day?
The January.
Was it like a couple of days before Sunday?
17.
On Thursday?
Yeah. I didn't see that on Thursday.
I did not receive that.
I'm going to check that out and I'll show you now.
This was a shir recorded by Rabbi Lapin, January 18th, Slachim 7b.